Okay, good morning. It's good to be back. And first of all, just want to say thank you for allowing us to have the time off to rest, listen to God, be refreshed, and we appreciated it. And we're looking forward to the next bit of the journey with God here at Hexham. But it is nice to be back in some ways. As I walked in this morning, I parked the car up and walked in, and I thought it was like, on one level, it felt like an age since it was, I went, and on another level, that felt like, didn't see like 5 minutes that I was walking down the same path. It's funny, isn't it, how time can feel quite different even in the same thing, but it has been good, and I'm going to try and avoid the S word as much as I can. For those who don't know what the S word is, it's sabbatical. I've been in so many settings where guys have come off sabbatical, and every 5 minutes you're hearing them say, when I was on sabbatical. So I'm going to try and avoid doing that. You might hear me now and again say it while I was away, and you'll know what I mean. But, you will get little snippets coming out for those who are saying, well, what happened? You'll get little snippets, even this morning. But I do want to, this morning, we're trying to complete a series that we've been doing, so I want to focus on that. I've got quite a bit that I want to share. So I will drop bits in as we go. But for visitors, if you've not been around, we've been looking at a series called to be people who live differently by different standards. Called to be people who are different. My favorite term for it is called to be people who are distinctive. That's my favorite title for us. But we've had a few different talks in this series. We've had Pauline, who talked about people who live by the teachings of Jesus. Just a bit of a throwaway. This is where I end up getting myself lost when I do throwaways, but hey-ho. A bit of a throwaway. While I was away, just so reminded and drawn. I don't know whether you have one of these red-letter Bibles, but, where all the verses of Jesus are in red, and just again drawn back to, and particularly the Sermon on the Mount and the Beatitudes, and just how important it is to maybe go again. If you haven't done it before, do it. If you've done it before, but it's a long time, to go through and read those red verses. That's all about Jesus. It's all that Jesus said. Andy Stanley says that if a guy predicts that he's going to die, and he predicts that he's going to rise again, and it happens, it's probably worth listening to. So I think those red verses are so worth revisiting again, an important part of our Bible reading. So just a little bit of an encouragement there. People who live by the teachings of Jesus, we can only do that if we know them. People who share life deeply, Tony did, about family and who we are in family. Holly looked at people who worship. Tony then looked again at people who demonstrate God's power. Susanna, last time, was looking with a few others helping her at prayer. And this morning, as we bring that to an end, we're going to look at people who live by different standards. And we've been rooting that in various passages and chapters and verses from Acts. And so I want to start this morning straight away in a verse from Acts. It's Acts 17, and it's verse 7. This is, to put it in its context, Paul and Silas have been there, they've been accused of stirring things up, and now Jason is getting accused because it says this, and Jason has welcomed them. Who's the them? Paul and Silas. He's welcomed them, and they all act contrary to the decrees of Caesar, saying that there is another king, Jesus. And that's the verse from Acts that we want to root into here, another king. There's another king. And I want to just think about for a minute, what does that mean, another king? Who's the ruler? It's been mentioned already in there. Who's the ruler at this time? Who's in charge? Caesar. Caesar's in charge. He's making the rules. And actually, for them to say, there's another king, it was a bit like off with your head territory. You know, you're in big trouble. You start saying, there's somebody else who has a higher authority. You could be in big trouble. This was dangerous territory. So what were they saying? Why were they saying, there's a different King Jesus? Why is that important? Why is that significant? And what difference does it make? If you think about kings in this time and rulers in this time, they very much set the laws, set the standards. They decided what was right, what was wrong, and you lived by those standards or you died by those standards. Not too much like that now with our king, is it? It's more other people who set those standards. But here, you've got Caesar who thinks he's the one. What he says goes. And suddenly, these are saying, but actually what Jesus says, Jesus is higher. He's more important. His standards are different. And it's an important thing to get hold of. This whole idea that Jesus' standards and everybody else's standards. And I want to try and touch that a bit this morning. So before we do, I just want Holly. I've got a few people down to do readings. If I end up running out of time, which I might well, I might cut some of the readings and just say the scriptures. So forgive me if I don't do your reading. But Holly, I've just asked Holly just to come and read a story that prompted me down this series.
So this is from chapter one of a book called Pearl Hunters, Becoming a People of Presence by Stuart Kyler. And the chapter's called Distinctive. Let's imagine for a moment an angelic conversation. Put aside any theological problems you may have with angels talking for a minute. I'm not trying to make any theological point. One angel is looking at what's happening on Earth on a huge plasma screen. I do hope they have them in heaven, otherwise what am I going to watch movies on? He looks forlorn, saddened by the vivid images flashing across the screen. He's almost motionless, deeply engrossed, concentrating on every movement of the humans he's watching. Something is clearly troubling him. Another angel arrives. What movie are you watching? Oh, just the saints of God on earth. It's set somewhere in England. A nice town, very peaceful, replies the human watching angel. What's happened so far? Asks the new angel. Not really sure. It's a bit slow moving. Basically, the saints of God are dispersed throughout the town, going about their daily business. And every Sunday, they get together for a sing-song, and one of their number shouts at them for half an hour. Doesn't seem very interesting. Do you think it's going to get any more exciting than this? The second angel is now moving towards the door, having seen enough of the human movie. I hope so, replies the first. It's supposed to get very exciting. I've read the book, so I know what happens at the end of the story. But this bit's so boring. Having lost his concentration, the human watching angel tries to find something to hold his attention, but he's distracted. Well, who is who? Asks angel number two, about to depart. I can't tell the saints apart from anyone else. That's the problem, says the watching angel, now standing with a remote in his hand, ready to end the program. They all look the same.
Challenging, isn't it? They all look the same. And we shouldn't. We shouldn't, that's the thing. We should look different. And that's what I want to get hold of this morning. I want to tell a few stories this morning, and I make no apology for that. Even through the night, I woke and God was reminding me of different things. And in the end, I was saying to God, God, I've only got 30 to 40 minutes. I haven't got 3 hours. But lots of things were coming to me of stories that root into this whole thing. And Jesus told stories because people could get hold of the stories and afterwards remember the story and think, what was it about? So it's good enough for Jesus. It's good enough for me. So I want to tell you some stories. Living by different standards. What does that mean? When I was about 17, 16 or 17, so about 10 years ago, some of you are not very good at maths, are you? I started an apprenticeship. Tony will appreciate some of these stories, and Kevin's heard most of these stories. But I started an apprenticeship. And when I went to apprentice school, I went for 12 months into this apprentice school before I then did 3 years out on following tradesmen around. And they did a couple of things. The first thing they do, they gave me a Zeus book. Tony, you'll know what that is. Not Dr. Zeus, a Zeus book. And it's basically a book that was full of standards. Standards that engineers had to work by. So that was the first thing. And I carried that with me throughout my trade. The other thing they did was they gave me some tools. They gave me tools like a hammer. And they gave me a center punch. And they gave me a big hacksaw. And a few other tools like that. And then in the workshop, they had a big tool store with lots of other things in that we could go and use, like tri-squares and things like that, all the accurate measuring stuff, which was fine. And then they said, right, get some bits of metal, here's what you're going to do. And throughout those months, they would have us making things. And at first, we weren't very bright, so we didn't quite realize what was happening here. But they had us making things, and like all 17, 18-year-olds, some of it took forever. You were filing, you were rubbing on this plate with blue to see if it was the right level, you were checking it with gauges to see if it was right, and some people were aiming for the instructor to get to the point where he said, spot on. Some of us were possibly waiting for to get to the point where the instructor said, that'll do. But there was a bit of a difference. But what we didn't realize was, each time they were giving us some metal and making things, we were making a very accurate measuring tool that was going to be ours for life. So one of the first things I had to make was a tri-square, metal tri-square, engineer's tri-square. And I made it, and I kept going to the instructor, and he kept sending me back, saying, no, it's not accurate enough. And eventually I got to the point where he said, yeah, that's okay, and we had to put our name on it. Once we'd done that, all of the accurate tri-squares in the tool store disappeared. The only one we had now was the one I'd made. And then they'd get us making another tool. We made things like a center square where you could put it across a piece of metal that's round, and it would accurately mark a line across the center of a round piece of bar. Accurately, I say, if you made it accurately. We made engineers' spirit levels, made my own junior hacksaw, made my own straight edge. I've still got them in the shed at home. All of them, bear in mind, I'm now making with the tri-square that I made in the first place, that'll do. So what's happening? Each time I'm making a tool, it's only as accurate as the first one I made. And if I have the same attitude with the second tool, that's near enough as well, isn't it? And so it went on. And each time they took the accurate tools away. So we made our own toolkit. We even made, for those of you who can remember them, you remember the blue toolboxes that you could have, the nice, shiny, we made them ourselves. We made the hinges, we made the handles. We had to go in and fabricate them. And they sent them away and got paid, and they came with our name on and gave us a lock and said, there you are, there's all your tools, Neil. Put a lock on it. So we did. That went on for a few months, and then we did a few other trade trainings. And then, at the end of our training, we came in one week, and they said, get your toolboxes out. Here's some nice steel plate. Here's some bits of steel rod. Here's an engineering drawing. You're going to make your final test piece. The light started to dawn, because this test piece was a thing called a Geneva engineering piece. It was basically, you had to make out of this metal a very accurate angled piece of metal. You had to make two cogs, one that spun on it, one that went through it and had a handle. One had slots, four slots. One had four pegs, And when you turned the handle, the idea was the peg went in the slot and it moved it round, and then the next one moved it round, if it was accurate. I think you're seeing where the problem comes, aren't you? Because now my final test piece is only as accurate, not just as accurate as I'm going to make it, but as all my tools. If I didn't stick to the high standards, then the output was low standard. There are standards there for a reason. You ladies, we use standards all the time. When you're baking your cake this afternoon, you'll use standards. It might be a cup, it might be ounces, it might be kilograms, it might be a spoonful. And I think you know that if you don't stick by the standards of the recipe, you won't get what you're expecting. Christmas Day, when I say to Elaine, can I have a piece of that lovely Christmas cake? If she hasn't made it right, it might be more of a rock bun. Now, don't get me wrong, I love rock buns, especially when they're made with lots of sugar. But if I'm expecting a Christmas cake, I'm not going to be too happy on Christmas Day when it's a rock bun. Because we have to stick to the standards, don't we? How many of you know there used to be standards on the carrots that we could have in our shop? That's true. If they weren't straight enough, they didn't go in the shop. I have these visions of who has the measuring gauge to measure all these carrots to see if they're straight enough. That one's straight enough, that one's not. Can you imagine it? Now, of course, they've slackened that a bit. They'll allow wobbly carrots, but they have to be sold as wobbly carrots. But there are standards. And there were standards here. There would be things that came out where it said, by order of the king. And you had to obey. Sometimes in HCC, there are notes go out that are by order of Pauline. And believe me, you do what she says. I've seen me come in on the ladies' nights and there's notes all over the place. By order of Pauline, the glasses go here. The cutlery goes here. And usually it says, if in doubt, see Neil. But we have standards that we stick to, or we should stick to. And we must respect and we must honor them. But here, they've got standards that the king is setting, and Jesus sets higher standards. Jesus puts his standards much higher than we do. And he expects us to follow them. He wants us to follow them. We are meant to follow and honor what our government says, unless it contradicts what God says. It doesn't take away what we've got to honor in terms of our government. But actually, sometimes, we don't want to live the way the world wants us to live. We want to live a bit differently. The government can set our standards. Culture can set our standards. We can decide, I'll live to this level because the government says. Or I'll live to this level because that's what culture says. Bit like our story. They're all the same. Culture says, it's a buy, try before we buy type world we live in, isn't it? Culture says, why get married? Why not live together first? See if it works. That's culture standard. It's not God's standard, is it? So how do we set our standards? Do we live by the world's standards? Do we live by culture's standards? Or do we aim to live by God's standards? Well, one thing, we've got to know what God's standards are. And the only way we're going to do that is to know what he says. But knowing the standards isn't always enough. Katie, where are you? This is quite a long reading, but I want us to hear it.
This is from Matthew chapter 23, verses 1 to 28. Then Jesus said to the crowds and to his disciples, "The teachers of the law and the Pharisees sit in Moses' seat. So you must be careful to do everything they tell you. But do not do what they do, for they do not practice what they preach. They tie up heavy, cumbersome loads and put them on other people's shoulders, but they themselves are not willing to lift a finger to move them. Everything they do is done for people to see. They make their phylacteries wide and the tassels on their garments long. They love the place of honor at banquets and the most important seats in the synagogues. They love to be greeted with respect in the marketplaces and to be called rabbi by others. But you are not to be called rabbi, for you have one teacher, and you are all brothers. And do not call anyone on earth father, for you have one father, and he is in heaven. Nor are you to be called instructors, for you have one instructor, the Messiah. The greatest among you will be your servant. For those who exalt themselves will be humbled, and those who humble themselves will be exalted. Woe to you, teachers of the law and Pharisees, you hypocrites! You shut the door of the kingdom of heaven in people's faces. You yourselves do not enter, nor will you let those who enter who are trying to. Woe to you, teachers of the law and Pharisees, you hypocrites! You travel over land and sea to win a single convert, and when you have succeeded, you make them twice as much a child of hell as you are. Woe to you, blind guides! You say, if anyone swears by the temple, it means nothing. But anyone who swears by the gold of the temple is bound by the oath. You blind fools! Which is greater, the gold or the temple that makes the gold sacred? You also say, if anyone swears by the altar, it means nothing. But anyone who swears by the gift on the altar is bound by that oath. You blind men! Which is greater, the gift or the altar that makes that gift sacred? Therefore, anyone who swears by the altar swears by it and by everything on it. And anyone who swears by the temple swears by it and by the one who dwells in it. And anyone who swears by heaven swears by God's throne and by the one who sits on it. Woe to you, teachers of the law and Pharisees, you hypocrites! You give a tenth of your spices, mint, dill and cumin, but you have neglected the more important matters of the law, justice, mercy, and faithfulness. You should have practiced the latter without neglecting the former. You blind guides, you strain out a gnat, but swallow a camel. Woe to you, teachers of the law and Pharisees, you hypocrites! You clean the outside of the cup and dish, but inside they are full of greed and self-indulgence. Blind Pharisee, first clean the inside of the cup and dish, and then the outside also will be clean.
Thank you, Katie. The Pharisees knew the rules. They knew the standards. In fact, they added a few of their own as well, but they didn't do them. And Jesus reserved his harshest words for those who knew but didn't do, for those like the Pharisees who tried to make it harder for others even though they weren't living by it themselves. He held very harsh words for them. If you compare how he spoke about them, I've been to Israel three times and stood near the city walls and looked out to Temple Mount and seen the sepulchres. And can you imagine Jesus standing there looking at the whitewashed sepulchres and saying, "You're like whitewashed sepulchres, all nice on the outside, but horrible and full of dead man's bones on the inside." Can you imagine what they felt when he said that? He was harsh with them because they knew better, but they weren't living it. Contrast that with the time when we read where the woman's caught in adultery. And probably some of the same people bring her to Jesus. Not first, they only bring the woman, not the man. And then they bring her, and I can imagine some of this I'm adding, but I can imagine them stood there with the rocks already in their hands, ready to throw and trying to catch Jesus out and saying, "She's caught in adultery, so what should we do with her? What does the law say?" And that's the story where Jesus starts to write in the sand. We don't know what he wrote. Many preachers have had their own ideas of what he wrote, but in truth, we don't know what he wrote. But whatever he wrote, he then turns and says, "Be without sin, you cast the first stone." And one by one, they drop the stones and they walk away. And then he says to the woman, "Who's your accuser?" And she looks up and says, "No one here." Jesus isn't harsh with her. He says, "I don't accuse you either. I don't condemn you. But what I do tell you is, maybe you should think about a change in your lifestyle. Maybe you should go away and not do that again." See how different he is with those who are sinners but need that forgiveness as to those who think they're righteous and yet don't live by it. It's one thing having standards and knowing standards. It's another how we do it. Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees. I never want Jesus to talk to me in that manner. But that's how he was with them. So, how should we be then? I want us to look at Colossians. I'm aware of the time. Colossians 3, 1 to 11. Who's got that reading? Come on, Barbara.
"Since then, you have been raised with Christ. Set your hearts on things above, where Christ is, seated at the right hand of God. Set your minds on things above, not on earthly things. For you died, and your life is now hidden with Christ in God. When Christ, who is your life, appears, then you also will appear with him in glory. Put to death, therefore, whatever belongs to your earthly nature: sexual immorality, impurity, lust, evil desires, and greed, which is idolatry. Because of these, the wrath of God is coming. You used to walk in these ways in the life you once lived. But now you must also rid yourselves of all such things as these: anger, rage, malice, slander, and filthy language from your lips. Do not lie to each other, since you have taken off your old self with its practices and have put on the new self, which is being renewed in knowledge in the image of its creator. Here there is no Gentile or Jew, circumcised or uncircumcised, barbarian, Scythian, slave or free, but Christ is all and is in all."
Thank you, Barbara. Johnny, come and read yours.
Then 12 to 17. "Therefore, as God's chosen people, holy and dearly loved, Clothe yourselves with compassion, kindness, humility, gentleness, and patience. Bear with each other and forgive one another. If any of you has a grievance against someone, forgive as the Lord forgave you. And over all these virtues, put on love, which binds them all together in perfect unity. Let the peace of Christ rule in your hearts, since as members of one body, you were called to peace, and be thankful. Let the message of Christ dwell among you richly, as you teach and admonish one another with all wisdom through psalms, hymns, and songs from the Spirit, singing to God with gratitude in your hearts. And whatever you do, whether in word or deed, do it all in the name of the Lord Jesus, giving thanks to God the Father through him.
Thank you, Johnny. So we're getting here to some of God's standards here. Here we read that there are some things we need to put off, and there are some things we need to put on. So what are we to put off? Let's have a look at some of those things. Things to put off. And again, things to put off. Sexual immorality, impurity, lust, evil desires, greed. They're some of the things that God wants us to put off, to take off, to avoid. And the next slide. What am I looking at? What am I watching? What am I reading? Who am I talking to? Who or what am I listening to? What sort of Christian example am I at work when I'm having my recreation time? I need to put off the things that we heard there. So what do I need to put on? Let's go to the next slide. Put on compassion. Put on kindness. Put on humility. Put on gentleness. Put on patience. Put on forgiveness. Put on love. What a difference the world would see if all of those things we put on. Here's some other things that we need to put on. Put on the armor of God. Put on garments of praise. Put on priestly garments. Tony could preach sermons on all of these. Put on strength. These are some of the things that the Bible tells us to put on. So there are things we need to take off, and there are things we need to put on. When I preached on this quite a number of years ago, and I likened it to the Karate Kid. Can you remember, anybody remember that? The Karate Kid film. Remember the Karate Kid? The way that the guy taught him, he got him waxing cars, can you remember? And he said, you got to wax on, wax off. Wax on, wax off. And we've got to daily be taking off, putting on. Take off, put on. Actually, Catherine Hardcastle that Christmas presented me with a Christmas gift that I've still got. Says, wax on, wax off. You know, this isn't something that we can do once and think we've achieved that. This is something we need to do regularly. To put on what God wants on. To put off what the world wants to put on us. And if you struggle with some of these things and you think, I'm constantly struggling. I'm not saved because I struggle with these things all the time. I want to say this to you. If we get to the stage where we can live with some of these things without our conscience saying something to us, that's a red flag. Actually, when we're struggling, it's a good sign. Holy Spirit is there saying, but you shouldn't do this. But you shouldn't live like that. That's a good amber flag for me. So don't be feeling condemned. Oh, I'm struggling with it again. Well, at least you're struggling with it. You're not immune to it. But we need to put on, put off, put on a regular basis. That's how God wants us to be. And it won't always be easy. I wish I could say, I put all those things off and I put all those things on and I'm like that every day. But it's not like that, is it? It's a daily thing where we need to say, God, I need to put off the things that I took on yesterday and again put on your love, your grace, your compassion. I want to put on my garments of praise. And we then would be more distinctive to the world. We would make a difference. But too often, the world can't see a difference. The world can't see a difference. And we need to be different. If we want to see God move, if we want to see God change Hexham, we need to be different. There needs to be different standards that we live by to what the world around us lives by. I could go on for a long time about that. But I want to finish with this. How many of you like Marmite? How many of you can't stand Marmite? How many of you have never tasted Marmite? Oh. I'm one of those few rare people who, Marmite's all right, I don't love or hate it, but most people either love Marmite or they absolutely hate Marmite. What's this got to do with anything? This is where I tell you a little bit about while I was away, which I've tried to save some time for. I hope what I've said so far has made sense. I've tried to curtail it, but when we were in America, we went to two different places. We went first to Waco in Texas. And Waco in Texas, for those who don't know, is where we get our Texas teams that come each March, that come and work with us and do evangelistic outreach. And it was the first time, I've been working with these guys for 18 years now, it was the first time I'd been over there and visited them. It was great, I loved it. It was great to be there as well the weekend when they were doing, by the Sunday night, they had to have the final applications in if they want to come on our team. So I had lots of good, interesting conversations with some of those people. But here's something I noticed about Waco. The biggest single influence in Waco, by far, was the Baylor Baptist College. Wherever you went, you knew about Baylor. You knew about the college, and the people knew about the college. Now, you can say what you like about Bible Belt, all the rest of it. It's there. However it is, it's there. We went on they graciously sent us on a minibus tour with some other people, not people we knew, to get a tour of Waco so we could get a feel for Waco. And the driver and we had a girl who was doing all of the toury bit. And before we started the journey, we didn't know who was in the bus, and she didn't really, but she said, before we start, we are a Christian company, we like to pray before we start. And she prayed quite a free prayer, not a registered prayer, quite a free prayer. She prayed and off we went on our tour of Waco. But that you touched something everywhere you went in Waco that was an effect of Baylor. And the churches, when you talked about the churches, everybody knew about the different churches. Yeah, Highland Baptist, which is the one we work with, Antioch Church there. There was something you touched everywhere you went, wasn't there? I mean, I said to this girl, interestingly enough, at one point when we got off, so I said, what church are you part of then? What church are you fellowshipping at? She was obviously part of Baylor. She said, well, actually, I'm not going to one at the moment. I haven't really got into... You can imagine how my conversation went after that. and the driver was going... You know. But what I'm saying is, there was a distinctiveness there in the town, in the city, that people knew and people felt. They knew. We then went to California, went to Bethel, and again, it was interesting. The first day, we had a bit of a free day, so we were trying to get used to things. We walked miles, nearly killed ourselves. And at the end of the day, we went into this little supermarket to buy some things to take back to the flat with us. And the girl who was serving us said, where are you from? We said, we're from England. She said, are you visiting Bethel? I said, yes, I am. You obviously know it. She said, oh, that's the church I go to. I said, oh, that's interesting. We had a little conversation, off we went. We were using Ubers all over the place. It was the easiest way to get around. So I think it was the first night on the way back after the evening meeting, sent for the Uber, got in the car, driver's driving along, he says, been to the leaders' conference then? I said, yes, I have. He said, was Bill Johnson speaking? I said, yes, he was. Was so-and-so leading the worship? I said, probably. I haven't got a clue who the worship leaders were, but they were good. And we had this whole conversation. He said, I'm a mentor for the twos in their college. I said, oh, that's good. So, and we had these conversations everywhere you went. But this was the most interesting conversation I had. The last night, we got into the Uber. Young girl, driving the Uber. She said, so what's been going on here then? Oh, ah, we've got somebody who doesn't know. So I was ready, all ready for the... And she said, I said, well, we've been to a leaders' conference, part of Bethel. Are you familiar with Bethel? Oh, yes, she said. I know Bethel. She clearly wasn't a Bethelite. I'm pretty sure she wasn't a church goer at all. But she said, I know Bethel. And she said, you know, the thing about Bethel in this city, she said, there are two views on Bethel. There are those who love it. There are those who can't stand it. I said, oh, that's interesting. She said, but I like to do my own research. I said, okay. She said, and I've looked and I've researched and I've looked at what they're doing. And they are transforming our city. Our downtown is being cleaned up. Our downtown is being developed, and it's because of Bethel. And she said, so I like them. Now, I don't care whether who loves and who hates them. They're being Marmite in that town. Whether people like them or hate them, people know about them. People know what their flavor is. People know what they're about. It was interesting because we'd been through four TED Talks, and one of the TED Talks was from their development officer for transforming the city. And she was telling us a bit about how they do it and also telling us some of the things that they're going to do. So I said, actually, they're going to do even more. And I started to tell her some of the things that I've heard that they're going to do. They were making a difference. Now, you can say, yeah, Neil, they're big churches. We're just a little church in Little Hexham. Well, let's make at least a little difference. But do you know what? We can make a big difference. We can be Marmite in this town. We can be those who, when they touch... Wouldn't it be lovely if people came to Hexham and they said, have you heard of Hexham Community Church? Oh, yes, we've heard of Hexham Community Church. They're the ones that do all the good stuff. They're the ones that are making a difference. Now, do you know what? In areas we are. I talk to people, I bump into people in different places who know about my town. Not our church, not Christians. They know about my town. For those who don't know, sorry, my town is our work with adults with special needs. I bump into people all the time who know about our reading. I bump into people who know about Wednesday Welcome and all the other things we do. But you know, God wants to do even more. And it starts with me and with you. And it starts with getting our standards right so that we are a good, whatever you think of Marmite, we are a good flavor in this town. There's four people who very quickly now run around for me and give something out to you. And whether you like Marmite or don't like Marmite, I'd like you to take one. There's not enough for everybody, but if you're a couple, get one. If you like Marmite, you can eat it. If you don't, you can give it away. But I want to ask you this. Whether you eat it or whether you give it away, don't do it for a week. I want you to keep that Marmite on your notice board or on the top or wherever it is for a week. And just ask yourself each day when you see that Marmite, What sort of flavour am I today? What sort of Marmite am I going to be today where I go? What sort of effect am I going to leave? And then you can do what you like with the Marmite after that. If you haven't tried Marmite, take one and try it. Let's be people who make a difference. Let's be a church that makes a difference. Let's be a church that whether people love us or hate us, it's because of the right things. I don't want people to hate us because we're the church that is judgmental or is harsh. We can do that. I can make people hate the church very easily. I want them to love or hate us because what we're saying and what we're doing and the way we're living is at least challenging them. That what they see makes them either want it or step back. But at least they're being challenged. At least we are making a difference. Can we do that? Can we be those Marmite people? We can. Will you stand with me? I want to get to the point where everything we do is to the glory of God. Just while the worship band come back, I want you to just be thinking about what's God saying to you? Where are the areas where maybe it's our distinctiveness hasn't quite been there? Maybe we've got some of the things still on that we need to put off. Maybe there are some things that we need to put on that we haven't. What is God challenging you on today? Come out, get some prayer. We've got a ministry team who'll pray with you. If you got sickness this morning, we'll pray with you. We'll anoint with oil. That's what the Bible says. Anoint them with oil, the prayer of faith will heal the sick. We'll do that. But let's do business with God. There's tea and there's coffee, but there's business with God first. So as we sing our last song, whatever that song's going to be, if you need to do some business with God, come out and let the ministry team pray with you. But let's go out there and be Marmite in Hexham. God bless you.